say, that's why he's not here, because I was over there, so he didn't talk to Superintendent Fletcher.
So we say in the Tefillah of Al-Nisim that the desire of the Yevonim was Ashikom Tarasecho L'Habirom Mechukei Ritzonecho. And the Bereshim wanted that the Yevonim wanted to take us away from the Chukim of the Bereshim's Ratzon, the Chukei Ritzonecho. So the same way there are physical Chukim, there are physical laws of how the world works, the laws of nature, which we don't have to understand why they're so, but we know that they are reality and that's how the world functions. The Bereshit put chukim into the world, which we don't necessarily understand exactly what they are about, but that being, they are a reality which we need to deal with. And the Yevonim had a specific problem with the chukim Ritzonecho. So the simple understanding is Yevonim's whole yesod was the superiority of man and the man's intellect. It's something which doesn't make any sense to man, therefore by definition was not acceptable, it was not correct. And the fact that we are going to be having the world of Chukim, it was something which was antithetical to the Yevonim, and that's what they had challenge with. The day of Mila, the day of Shabbos, these type of things were beyond the normal realm they had difficulty with. I think maybe there's another understanding based on Rav Hirsch's understanding of what Chukim are. Rav Hirsch has a beautiful explanation in Chukim, which I think has a lot to share with us. So in his work, The 19 Letters, so in letter number 10, he divides up the mitzvahs into six types of mitzvahs. We're familiar with Chukim and Mishpatim, so he divides up what he calls Torahs, which are the historically revealed concepts about Hashem, the character of man and of Yisrael, and their implications. Mishpatim, expressions of justice towards being equal to yourself, justice towards humans. Chukim, mitzvahs, eidos, and avodah. So what are chukim? Chukim are expressions of justice toward subordinate beings, based on the principle that all things exist in God's service. So in other words, justice towards the earth and plants and animals, as well as toward your property, your body and your mind and your heart, which together make up one yourself. That's what he puts down in the letter number 10. In the 11th letter, he expands upon that a little bit. And he says the following: the same justice that you owe to man should be shown to every lower being, from the earth which bears everything, to vegetation and the animal world, to your own body, your mental powers, your own self, more than anything else you can call yours. In the case of Mishpatim, the demand for justice is based upon the equality of men. The demands of Mishpatim are clearer to you because, to a large extent, you only need to know your own feelings in order to identify with the feelings of your fellow man. If you have the same knowledge of your body and your mind, and the conditions for their harmonious interaction, Chukim would make sense to you as much as Mishpatim. The Chukim require you respect for all that exists as Hashem's property. Do not destroy anything. Do not misuse it. Do not waste. Use everything wisely. Respect for all species. Do not intermingle them, etc. Limitations of your own instincts and animal-like actions. And respect for your soul. When you nourish its tool, the body, supply the body with that nourishment which will enable it to act as a pure and willing messenger of the world to the spirits, and the spirits to the world. Concealment the salvation of the animal in you. And last, respect for your own person and its purest expression, your power of speech. That's what he puts under the midah of Chukim. I want to read to you in the Karev, in section 62, which is regard for one's own body, which includes under that the Isra of Ibud Atzmoy, Sekhanas Atzmoy, Mitzvah Shriyas HaNefesh. So the Isra of suicide, self-injury, self-ruin, and and the Mitzvah of self-preservation. Okay, so he talks about suicide. Now, it's not really our topic, but I think he presents it in such a beautiful way. If you can say that about suicide, okay. The Isser. The life of your neighbor stands before you as a sanctity. You may not destroy the frame of your brother's human spirits. You may not tear the bond that God has tied between spirit and body and your brother. And would you not recognize the same sanctity in your own life? Would you not respect the bond tied by God in your life as in your brother's? Would you not destroy your own frame, your human spirit that flee from the earth which God has sent you before God summons you away? You have no more right upon your own life, upon your own body, than you have upon your brother's. You are a murderer, whether it be yourself who you murder or your brother. Step number one. Okay. Then he says, there's people who do this because they have misfortunes, life's burdens. Is it not self-deception to think that suicide is a crime only against God and yourself, and not a crime against your fellow creatures? Was even a small part of your being, a fragment of your power, meant for you only? We're here just for ourselves. We're here for the world. So we have no right to take it away. Did you not have a duty to becoming a blessing unto the world in everything and with everything? Do you not belong to it with your whole being? Were you not born from it? Were you not born for it when God called you into existence here below? And do you not deprive the world of its justified demands upon you when you destroy your existence here? You can't take yourself away. You don't belong to yourself. You belong to the world. Lest you say, but you stand alone in God's world. No bonds of love, friendship, or blood tie you unto another being. Is it only these then that have a claim upon you? Is it not everything which bears God's stamp? Is not every man whom you serve? Every animal that you have and can preserve? Every tree that you can guard? Every earthly creature to which you belong? If you stand alone as far as men are concerned, is it maybe your own fault? We belong to the world. But first, there's a fascinating thing. He writes the first mitzvah of the mitzvahs of the chukim is the mitzvah of Bal Tashchis. The Torah says, Bal Tashchis, that's a tzor, l'ndochel of garzen. You can't destroy wantonly. You can't destroy for no purpose. So there's a Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara in Shabbos, and Daf Kufei. The Gemara says that the way of the Yetzirah is that he tells a person, the verse says, the person is a person who destroys clothing in his anger, it should be to you like he's did Avodah Zarah. Because that's the way of the Yetzirah. He starts with something small and eventually tells you to do Avodah Zarah, and you do that as well. So the person asks, okay, so you're saying the Yetzirah starts small, and once you listen to me, he keeps going further and further and further. So why dafka kriyat b'gadah mechamosa? So you should say, if a person, a person comes like the davening, next thing you know, he's talking about a zara. Like, what's the connection to kriyat b'gadah mechamosa? She says that when I borrow somebody's garments, I have full rights to use it. I'm considered the owner, the sheil is a matan l'yayma. I can do whatever I want with it. I can use it for any purpose. And matter of fact, if it's consumed and used up in the process of using it, mesa malachas malacha is potter, but I can't destroy it because it's not mine. Only the Baalim has a right to destroy. When a person is kriyat b'gadah mechamosa, what is he saying? That the beggar belongs to me. You're on your way to Avodah Zarah already. That I stand as the owner of the world. I can do whatever I want with it. The person says, no. The beggar belongs to me. I gave it to you to use for beneficial purposes. If in that course of that it gets worn out, that's what I gave it to you for. But it's not yours, it's mine. An attitude that I am the Baalim over the world is on the way to Avodah Zarah. Because you just took Kadosh Baruch Hu off of the pedestal and you put yourself instead. So that's what the Mora is saying. That's this about Tashkas. He says, Bal Tashkas, Betzim, is the Yesod of Kol Torah Kula. It's an attitude which defines how we approach the whole world. What he's adding over here, we sort of understand that in the sense of the world, and we forget about it in the sense of our being. We belong to Kodesh Baruch Hu also. The Bershom gave us our existence and our being because he wants us to accomplish things. He gave it to us, but it belongs to him. We can't take it. It belongs to the world. We're here to serve. We're here to give. We're here to provide for every person and everything around us, whether it's the taking care of the animal or the tree or whatever it is. We don't belong to ourselves. This is where Yavin had a problem. The Chukim took man off of the pedestal and put a Kadosh Baruch Hu on the pedestal. The Chukim are that this world is not ours. We're not the Bialim of the world to do whatever we want with it. We're here as the guests of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we constantly recognize that he has an expectation of us, and he's allowing us to subjugate the world. We keep Shua for valid purposes. But that to any point in time we believe that what belongs on the pedestal is man, and once you put man on the pedestal, it's not just any man, but usually it's yourself, which is what the Greeks did. So they had a society where there was a tremendous stress on beauty. We spoke about the world of victory and defeat. It wasn't just the world of victory and defeat. There was a sense of beauty. Things had to be perfect. So a child which was born, which is deformed, they killed. Because they have a right to override a life. Because it felt in it. You know, it's not the way I want it. You're the Bialim. It's always pale to me. Like, how these were tremendous philosophers, etc., and they arrived at a Zohar. So the answer is very simple. That, like the Mor says, you're on your way to Dovah Zohar. Once you take a Kadosh Baruch Hu off of the pedestal, you put man in the middle, man's the boss, so then there are powers which you realize at some point there are powers which you have to placate. But what were their idols were glorified men with all of the taivas and the gaivas and all of the chesroness of a man. So the bottom line, it's man that's on the pedestal. But if you're a really powerful man, you're a superman, so now you're the God. But that we are just a hechatimsa for something truly greater than ourselves, who doesn't have the chesaronus of man, doesn't have the limitations of man, doesn't have the taiva and the gaiva and the kina and all those things, that they couldn't comprehend. So the Klal Yisrael comes to the world of Chukim, and the world of Chukim is a whole new view of the world. We're here as guests of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we have responsibilities. What was Nischadashim when I was reading this piece from Hirsch? The Nakuda that we belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, that's I think pretty obvious. That he extended it that we belong to our fellow creatures, and not just to mankind, but to the world. We have responsibility to all of that. So the person says, I'm worth it to the whole world. You're never going to save a cat. Never once in your life gonna help an animal. So that's enough to say you have the right to leave. I mean, you want to say it in extreme, obviously that we, there's more to human life than that. But that's what he's saying. He explains the Chukim that the Deser Klayim is we respect the Bereshit, put a certain natural way that things grow. You can't change that. That's the concept of Klayim. There's a certain respect to the reality. We have, somebody one time asked me, like, is recycling a Jewish value, a Torah value? So I said, I think so. We are stewards of a world, can't just waste it. The same way we can't waste our bodies. We can't waste the world. A person who abuses his body, so he says, but not only may you not rob yourself of life, you may not even cause your body the slightest injury. You may not ruin your health through carelessness. You may not weaken yourself by abstinence from that which is permitted. you're not willfully bringing yourself into danger. You're not lessening your powers through an irregular way of life. Anyway, weaken your health or shorten your life. Only if the body is healthy is it an efficient instrument for the spirit's activity. Therefore, even the smallest anesthetic deprivation of strength is accountable to God. Every smallest weakening is partial murder. You should not rely upon the protective miracle of providence unless the fulfillment of duty makes it necessary to face danger. For providence does not protect carelessness and foolhardiness. You know, it's too much to ask from teenagers. It tells me, you know, how they drive, how they think, how they act. You know, where were you? I was climbing to the top of the building. Was it? Why? Because. Apparently, recently there was some fellow who climbed very difficult rock structure, rock formation, very high, without any type of harness. Without having to give any, just free. Somebody asked, like, what do I think about it? I said, a person who understands the value of life, how could you do such a thing? How could you take a chance on your life? But I once saw a suggestion, where it comes from. It says, a person who's ever been through a very, very traumatic moment where his life was in danger, and he was able to be saved, For those moments, he has a tremendous respect for his moment of the fact that he's alive. And that's a powerful emotion. It gives value to your life. Wow, I'm alive. So for some people, the only way they can get that is by driving motorcycles at 175 miles an hour around the course with other people without any protection on your body. So they feel mamish, like you're mamish right by the moment of death. And they say, right, wow, feels good. So it makes them feel alive. I once read a science fiction story about the amusement park of the future. The amusement park of the future, like right now, I mean, you know, the part of the amusement park is like that thrill of like danger. So you have a roller coaster which takes you up like 4 million feet, and then it drops you down at 90 degrees, you know, at 4 million miles an hour, and wow, you know. Well, the amusement park of the future, people might actually die. Like over here, the point is that you're just brushed with death. Or whether they actually would brush with death, you know, not really makes sense. So that's our society. We've lost the value of life. We want to feel alive. So we get it by, this is the final world of Yavin. It's my life, I can do whatever I want with it. But I do appreciate feeling alive, so let's challenge it, and worst comes to worst, I die. No, it's not because I fail, because it's expendable. It's not worth anything. The true understanding of the value of our lives is this. The more I understand it's not mine, it belongs to the Bari Olam, and it belongs to the world, there's so much purpose, and so much value. I play such a role. And our society has downplayed the value and the role and the purpose of man. And that's the final result of Yavin, is not that man is on the pedestal, the man is worthless. And then you get this argument of no self-preservation, the opposite. Because what am I anyway? I'm nothing. We're the most valuable thing in the world. Not because we're on the pedestal, because the being which is on the pedestal says we're valuable, because the world needs us. Our society is the final expression of Yavan in that respect. They put science on the pedestal, they put man on the pedestal, man's ability to figure things out. And there's no value to life anymore. And then, so we'll cut life here, we'll cut life there, you know, we can cut out life before it's born, we can discuss euthanasia, we can discuss, you know, suggestion in Britain. I mentioned to you a while back that Let's define the moment of birth to 72 hours after the child is actually physically comes out, and therefore it's only considered abortion. And you'll see the child has some significant issues. We allow to kill it because it's not alive yet, so it's only abortion. It's not murder. That's what they're contemplating. The limiting ourselves and being aware of the fact that we're stewards, it seems to be making us smaller. It makes us much more greater. It makes us much more significant. At the end of the day, the fight of Klai Yisrael is the nation which says to the world that life has purpose. Life has meaning. Every life has purpose. Every life has meaning. My life has purpose. My life has meaning. I'm valuable. I'm a gift of a Kodesh Baruch Hu to the world. So I'm a gift of Kodesh Baruch Hu to the world. I can't take it. I have to respect it. I have to take care of it. But I'm a gift. I'm a matana. So Chanukah is a time to reflect that how much do I respect myself, how valuable I really am, and how much I'm careful to respect myself in the physical sense, in the spiritual sense, and then use my life in a valuable way that I'm happy with, respecting that purpose and that function. Didn't record. Yours record?
Yeah.